Welcome back, folks. It's Chase and Josh with Factor Fantasy. That's Chase and I'm Josh, and we are here to give you the next installment in Season 1 of Demon Slayer here today. Last week, Chase took us through Episodes 4, 5, and 6. Today, I will be taking us through Episodes 7, 8, and 9, continuing this arc along, moving nicely. It's been fun. We've been talking about a lot of the things that happen, and not just what's on screen, but some of the things that could play into the future. And we've seen levels of competition to a certain point here, and at some point today we're going to take a little bit of a step up from what we've seen so far. So excited to bring it to you. Before we get started, I'll turn the floor over to Chase to say a few words.
Just keep climbing, man. Just keep climbing. It's interesting the steps you take to go up, because and how drastically it's gonna change with the adversaries we're gonna see fighting here. But yeah, man, let's get a cheers. Cheers to you, cheers to me, cheers to the demons that we'll see. Let's get it going, man. Malice in the chalice, brother.
Cheers, my man. All right, to kick us off here today, I'm gonna start at episode 7. This is almost a direct continuation of where Chase left off last week with episode 6. So this episode begins with the fight against the demon who can shift and split himself into three beings at the same time. So we've got this quick sequence, and it's like I said, this is kind of towards the end of episode 6, but it also plays right in the beginning of episode 7. It's almost like a quick minute and a half a recap or exact sequence of events on screen where one of the demons has a clean shot at Tanjiro, but right as it's about to strike, Nezuko pops out of the box and kicks the demon in the face. So Tanjiro comes up with the idea for Nezuko to protect the humans while he focuses on his attack. So what he ends up doing is Tanjiro goes underground to fight the demons on their turf. Well, underground, it was a little bit different than what he originally thought. It turns out it was a swamp. And so in the underground swamp, Tanjiro sees all the clothes from the victims that were taken. From the demon's attack, Tanjiro uses Water Breathing 6, which is the form of a whirlpool. And he kills the two demons and grabs an article of clothing before swimming up to the surface. But meanwhile, on land, Nezuko is still fighting the third demon. Again, I say third demon. It's all the same demon, but it's split itself into thirds. So the third demon is impressed with how strong Nezuko is. It battles her for some time, but it grows accustomed to her attacks. And eventually, Tanjiro is able to emerge, and he helps attack that third demon. He disables the demon to the point where he asks the demon about Muzan Kibutsuji. The demon says he can't tell Tanjiro, and Tanjiro smells the fear on the demon. And the demon goes for one last attack, and Tanjiro is forced to take its head off, killing it without getting any further information. Now, before we move on to the next part, Chase, what do you think about the ending of this fight, how he was able to take out the two demons on their own turf in the swamp, and then turn around, try to get a little information, just realize that sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do and take the demon out and not get anything out of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it was a very real aspect. Is what I took from it. It showed that this show, you know, it's kind of like Game of Thrones aspect. Like, it shows these people are in real danger and you're not going to get always the outcome you're looking for, you know. And I think it's a really very in awe moment, you know, where you realize it's not going to be the ending you want. And he kind of, you know, the whole goal of this was basically in vain. Like, they were trying to find that girl and rescue her, and nothing wound up happening with that. But he still knew, you know, almost like Gellert Grindelwald, for the greater good, you still have to save this area, because otherwise it's going to happen to more and more people. So it was a very real aspect, and I got to give the show credit for this, because they're not afraid to say no. Like, you're not being saved today, for sure.
All right, yeah, for sure, man. And then to continue on from here, Tanjiro looks over and Nezuko's fast asleep. It turns out that sleep helps Nezuko recover from her wounds, and Tanjiro promises Nezuko that he will make her a human again. Now, Mr. Kazumi has a bit of a meltdown about losing his fiance. Mr. Kazumi was the guy that, you know, from episode 6 that Chase went through last week, it was his fiance that was taken, and like Chase just said, they can't all be saved. And so even though he took out the demons and killed them and saved the area, this guy, Mr. Kazumi, lost his fiance, and there's no bringing her back. But what Tanjiro does do is he gives Mr. Kazumi the article of clothing that he grabbed from the swamp, and they unfold it, and it's a few of his fiance's items. So Tanjiro asks Mr. Kazumi to get the other girl home safe, and he agrees. And that's when Tanjiro's crow flies down and tells him to head to Asakusa, Tokyo, now. And the crow says a demon is lurking around there. And that's where Tanjiro arrives, and he's blown away by the immensity of the city. Keep in mind, Tanjiro came from this very small town by the mountains. There may be, I don't know, what do you think, 300 people tops in that entire village. So this is a brand new experience for someone like him who comes from a very small area, and he's blown away by the immensity. And as he's enjoying his dinner, he catches the scent that he smelled when he found his family murdered, and he immediately runs to investigate. So this is a big moment here. You know, obviously we talked about some of the abilities that the characters possess, and obviously one of Tanjiro's main abilities is his keen sense of smell. And now we've got we're at the 7th episode, and we almost have a full circle moment already of the original scent he smelled when his family was slaughtered. So he finds Kibutsuji. And then, you know, that's crazy too. This is something different that Demon Slayer, let's talk about this for a second. It's something different that Demon Slayer has done than all the other works. Like usually you don't see the big boss until you work your ass all the way up to it. We're on the 7th episode of the very first season. He comes face to face with the big bad. Like did you enjoy how Demon Slayer took that route? Because I'll be honest with you, I did kind of enjoy it. It was refreshing to see, like, okay, I don't just have to, you know, Scott Pilgrim the shit and make my way through all the damn boyfriends to get the girl, you know what I mean? He literally was able to see the end-all, be-all, big bad, the 7th episode in to season 1. What'd you think about that?
Oh, it was awesome. It was, and I'll let you get into the details in a minute, but this guy is intimidating as hell. He is a true badass. And it was very refreshing. Like, no longer do we have to, like, for Sorcerer's Stone, we wait until the very end to get, like, a glimpse of Voldemort, right? And then it really is, like, you're waiting until, like, Goblet of Fire till he's back at full power, which is, like, 4 books later. And until then, you have these, like, subplots. I'm finding more about the lore and the universe. No, they fucking threw you in and said, this is the guy, and good luck getting to him, is basically what happened.
Couldn't say it better, man. I also found it really great. So he finds Kibutsuji and he confronts him, and he goes to pull a sword, and Kibutsuji's daughter asks her dad, Kibutsuji, who Tanjiro is. And Tanjiro realizes that Kibutsuji is living there posing as a human. So he's got his daughter there, he's got his wife there. So this is now a really not an ideal situation for Tanjiro, because he's got to decide if he's going to try to kill someone. Like, obviously he knows who Muzan Kibutsuji is, but obviously in just a little bit you'll hear his own wife and daughter don't even recognize him by that name. And on top of that, a city full of strangers are going to think this guy just murdered this dude if he tries to kill him. Plus, yeah, we're going to see that Muzan's got a couple tricks up his sleeve as it is. But point being is Tanjiro can't really do much even to start a fight that he wants to, just because of the situation. He's got his wife, his daughter there. So Tanjiro realizes the woman and child are actually human. So it's not as if he's got a demon family. He's posing as a human himself, and he's got himself a human wife and a human daughter. But they don't seem to know, again, who Kibutsuji is themselves, or that the fact that Kibutsuji is a demon. And before too many questions are asked, Kibutsuji slices his nails across the back of an unsuspecting stranger, this man's neck, and ends up drawing blood. And it immediately turns this random individual into a demon. And the new demon ends up attacking and biting his own wife, and now there's a new problem on Tanjiro's hands, and that's where the episode ends. So, bro, talk to me a little bit about your takeaways. What did you like about this episode? Any dislikes? And just overall, what you thought?
This episode was fucking awesome, man. It really was great. I mean, you had the action for concluding from the fight in the beginning with the swamp demon. So, and then right as you kind of think like, wow, is this like almost over? Then you get into the real action because it kind of like slowed down for a minute. And you think kind of Tanjiro and Nezuko are catching their breath as, you know, they're getting some food and stuff. And then he drops his plate, crashes. He gets that, that iconic smell, that full circle moment. And Muzan looked like a fucking badass, like a Michael Jackson, Billie Jean, smooth criminal, literally spitting image, man. And, you know, he had the tie with the suit and... How genius is that, too? He wasn't, like, just some, like, big bad demon sitting in a castle. Like, what a unique way. Like, showing he's been around for thousands of years, he's been posing as a human just living a normal human life.
Just to chime in there real quick, because you just actually brought something to my attention I didn't even realize. You know, you were just talking about how Kibutsuji is just this, like, smooth criminal, and he's wearing the suit and really blends in well. And to your point, and where I'm thinking right now, all the other demons we've seen have been this grotesque-looking monster in some shape or form. I have the shirts off, their teeth are all jacked and all messed up, and they look the part of a monster. And to your credit and to what you just said, if you didn't know that he was who he was, you would think that he's just a normal human walking around. So it's really interesting how they, like, even if we go and look forward down the road, I'm not going to give anything up right here, but there's really not any other demon that presents itself in that way. They all other demons pretty much look like what you would expect a demon to look like outside of, like I said, Nezuko, or who we'll find next episode, someone who reminds me a little bit of Nurse Joy. I won't give anything away, but there's very few demons that give off the appearance of not being a monstrous, grotesque being. So that's a great point. But I'll let you continue on with your takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you even thinking about that for a minute. It's almost like it makes you wonder, the more powerful they become, the more human-esque they can make themselves to kind of blend in. But he was just a total badass. Like, literally, I keep using the word smooth criminal. How smooth was he? You know, cutting that guy's neck, and he starts turning into a demon, and really, that was his whole idea the whole time. Like, obviously, he knows this guy's part of the Demon Slayer Corps. We won't get into any of how deep the core goes, but, you know, he's probably thinking, get this little motherfucker out of here. Like, this is no threat whatsoever. Like, I'm just going to literally, like, you know what, kid? Like, if you think you're going to do something, let's see if you can even handle this first. And this will distract you. And I'm just going to go get in my little, you know, old-timey car with my family, and I enjoyed my movie. Fuck off now. Like, that's exactly what he was thinking. And it was one of those, another banger, man. It was like another well-written moment where you had everything merge perfectly. Like, it wasn't just constant action, action, action. Like, it had very unique, intricate details that related back to the overall plot line to drive this thing where it's supposed to go. And it wasn't your typical just, oh, we have this big creature again for you to fight. Like, this guy, the whole presentation of him made you stop and think, wow, like, I didn't see that coming. That guy is going to be a problem.
Agreed. And my own takeaways, too, is I agree with a lot of what you said. And what I found really impressive is when the transition between him going and taking out the swamp demon, and that battle, it made it seem harder than it was on the way they left it off, because they left it off as the end of episode 6 and the beginning of episode 7, right? So it almost seemed as if it was a longer, more intense battle than it really was. But if you combine it, that battle wasn't really all that intense. And later today we'll see a battle that is a little bit more, again, the adversaries, they keep growing in strength, and you'll see the abilities that they've got to go up against. But the point being, the transition from that to the crow, and the way the crow just made it sound is that it could just be any demon. Hey, there's been a sighting of a demon in this city in Tokyo, and it was a large city. So we're just thinking it could be anything. He goes there, and the demon's the fucking motherfucker of demons. It's the main guy. To like that was actually a surprising. My biggest issue with a lot of like fantasy fiction, anime, whatever you want to call it, I just feel like a lot of things are predictable. And I will say the way it was just so nonchalantly, oh, there's a demon here. I'm just thinking, okay, great. There's going to be another demon, probably a little bit stronger. Got to figure out a way to overcome it. No, dude, it was fucking Muzan Kubutsuji, the main villain. And to see him so early on was really unexpected. And then from that point to what Chase was talking about and how he was so smooth with, I'm not going to cause a scene here. We're not going to get into this. I'm going to scratch this guy's neck, turn him into a quick demon. That meant the fact that that's all he has to do to turn someone, by the way, is insane and an amazing ability in and of itself. But what it did, not only was it a shrug off the shoulder, like, get this small guy who means nothing to me away from me, it was also a way to keep the focus off of himself of, okay, no, like, why is this guy yelling at you? Like, what? Like, why does he have a beef with you? He ended up taking that completely out of the equation. He's like, well, now you've got a whole other problem you got to deal with, and I'm just going to continue on this way with everyone else. And that's kind of like, you know, where the episode ends, is with this new just formed demon attacking his own wife. And just imagine being that wife. Like, you're having a nice daily stroll, and all of a sudden your husband looks like a monster and is trying to eat you. Like, what? So, yeah, dude, it was a cool episode. You know, it was, I would say it was, some parts were a little bit more far-fetched than I would have, like, thought. But I've got no problem with it. It's not something I'm going to draw a huge issue to or bring attention to by any means. It's just, there's very few parts of that in that you can kind of be skeptical of, well, how'd that really go? Is that really how that would happen? Like, you know, so, but outside of that, I thought it was a good episode. And to kind of transition into the next one, going into episode 8, it's also, what I also like about what Demon Slayer does is they almost give you scene for scene, like the beginning minute of the next episode happens to be like the last minute of the previous episode. So it's almost in a direct scene for scene shot. But episode 8 starts with the transformation of the man Kubutsuji scratched from human to demon. And that new demon bites his wife and tries to finish her off. But that's when Tanjiro jumps in, while Kubutsuji is now an afterthought to him, because now he's got to protect everyone in this area from this new demon that everyone can see is causing a huge scene. So now, you know, being a demon slayer, he's got to take care of this problem, because if he sits there and tries to attack a man and not worry about that, they're going to be like, dude, what are you doing, right? So it was a really brilliant move by Kubutsuji in any event. So Kubutsuji takes this opportunity, and he brings his wife and daughter away, and they leave as to not risk exposure. And then while Tanjiro's holding this new demon down, Tanjiro remembers Kubutsuji, and he calls after him. He says, Muzan Kubutsuji, no matter where you go, I promise you won't escape me. You can run as far as you want. I'll follow you to the ends of hell, and my blade will be the last thing you see. I'll never forgive you for what you've done. Dude, what a badass line from Tanjiro, man. What do you think about that line? Look at that, just send chills down his spine, even though he doesn't even know who this little boy is. The fact that he calls him out like that and tells him, my blade will be the last thing you see, it's fucking badass, bro. What do you think about it?
Oh, it's badass. It is fucking awesome. And not giving anything away, and you probably won't hear anything about this from years to come from now, because, you know, the anime has to catch up with the series, but the series is complete, and I've read the series. Just always try to remember those lines, because it actually plays a very big full circle moment, but that'll be years from now. But it's a badass line for sure.
For sure, man. And then to continue on, regular police officers, they arrive on the scene, and Tanjiro pleads for them to bring restraints to hold down the new demon, but they're not listening. Instead, they actually threaten Tanjiro that they'll use force if he doesn't get off of the demon. And while he's having this argument with these police officers, out of nowhere, a woman uses a blood magic ability, and you can see it on screen where she scratches her arm, and the smell of flowers covers the area. And the woman wants to help Tanjiro, since Tanjiro still treats the new demon as a person and not a monster. And interestingly enough, the woman herself is a demon too, but also a doctor, and she also wants to destroy Kibutsuji as well. And then the scene cuts back over to Kibutsuji, and he tells his wife and daughter that he has to go to work. And that's like a boring old business meeting, and they believe him, and that's the part where Chase was making a joke about earlier, where he gets into his old-style car, or at least the wife and daughter do, and they drive off. And now he's got something to think about. And he's like, "What? Who the fuck is this guy?" You know, so he starts walking through this alley, and a drunk dude is outside stumbling around, and Kibutsuji accidentally bumps into him. And he even tries to apologize, though, even though there's really no need, because, you know, who he is, and we are about to see exactly the outcome of that altercation. But the drunk guy ends up picking a fight with him, and he ends up striking a specific nerve with Kibutsuji when he tells Kibutsuji that he looks dead already, that he's pale and doesn't look like a living person. And for whatever reason, out of all the shit that the guy was talking, that was the line that really pissed him off. And so Kibutsuji hits the man with the back of his fist, and the guy flies into the wall, cracking the back of his head open on the brick behind him, and he dies immediately. And then this other character, who claims to be the older brother of this guy, rushes at him, and he kills the older brother too with absolute ease. And then he ends up pinning the woman there against the wall, and he has this big monologue about how he's, you know, do I look weak to you? Do I look on the brink of whatever? Do I look like I need help? Or, and all this kind of stuff. And he talks about being very alive and almost on the brink of perfection, sort of deal. Really, just that obviously really struck a nerve with him, because we're going to find out what Muzan Kibutsuji is trying to do throughout this entire series. And, you know, not to give anything away, but he's got his own plans to make himself essentially immortal, but also like a living and able to walk in the sun type demon. So he ends up summoning two demons, and he tells them that there's a demon slayer that wears Hanafuda earrings, and he wants them to bring him that demon slayer's head. And so after the two demons leave, Kibutsuji has a flashback to when another demon slayer with a red sword and Hanafuda earrings was standing over him in what looks like hundreds of years ago. It was a really cool flashback. Now, did you notice that flashback? And did you notice like the positioning and how it really looked, and almost the fear it struck into him, which is insane given who we know Muzan to be?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I definitely did. And I want to bring this up for a quick moment, because you had me thinking, going back to the crow and how he just sent him there and it happened to be Muzan Kibutsuji, this really goes to show like how they protect that area. Like, they have no idea what demon is fucking there. They just send it to you. Imagine if you were one of the ones that got sent there earlier and it's Muzan Kibutsuji, and they're just like, "Oh, well, who gives a fuck? It's just like a lower level guy. We just sent him to like the hardest fucking guy in the area." Like, "Oh, he didn't make it back. Oh, well, we have more. That's why you send in the pawns first." But thoughts on that is, yeah, keep that image in your mind, because that image, there's a reason that Muzan wants Tanjiro dead so bad right now. That little flashback there, it definitely, remember, Muzan has been around for hundreds and thousands of years, and for it to make an impact on him like that, it definitely has a big place for a reason.
Yeah, for sure, man. From here, Tanjiro is being accosted by a shopkeeper who is upset that Tanjiro didn't want to eat his udon noodles. So just to placate the guy, he orders two bowls, because he starts yelling at Nezuko too to eat something, not realizing that that bamboo in her mouth is there for a fucking reason. But in any event, he ends up getting two bowls himself and eating them, tells the shopkeeper it's very good. And then the boy that was with the woman who had the blood magic with the flowers, he appears, and he says that like they're being brought to the woman, and she summons them to their place. And he, you know, this is an interesting part too. I understand why that this really affected Tanjiro the way that it did, but all this boy, we don't know his name yet, we're going to learn it in just a second, but this boy just offhandedly said that Nezuko isn't much to look at. They didn't say anything really crazy bad or whatever, but Tanjiro goes into a tailspin about how Nezuko was the most beautiful woman in their town and all this stuff. And it just, it even comes up into play. This is almost a little bit of a foreshadow because it ends up coming full circle in a few episodes from here. Just, I don't understand why they decided to bring that up. And he was so offended that someone didn't think his sister was beautiful. I don't know. In any event, the boy brings Tanjiro and Nezuko to the woman, and Tanjiro asks if it's difficult to treat humans because of the blood. At this point, the boy gets offended and ends up hitting Tanjiro. So the woman introduces themselves to Tanjiro, and we learn that her name is Tamayo, and the boy's name is Yushiro. And she tells Tanjiro that she's removed Kibutsuji's curse, and Tanjiro asks what curse, and she says that they can survive on small amounts of human blood, but she doesn't need to act like the typical demons we were speaking of, to, you know, tear flesh apart and eat them until their bodies are all ripped to shreds. Like, she just needs a small amount of human blood, and she was able to break that curse and allow herself to live in that fashion. And Tamayo tells them that she turned Yushiro into a demon, but it took her 200 years to learn how to do it, and he's the only one that she's been able to transform, is what she tells him. And the Tanjiro is like, oh wow, like all that just for one. And obviously Yushiro's really oddly defensive about Tamayo in a way. And to continue on, Tanjiro does believe that he can trust her, and he asks her if there's a way to reverse, instead of turn people into demons, if there's a way you can reverse it and turn a demon back into a human. And before he gets a real answer, the two demons that Kibutsuji sent after Tanjiro are tracking Tanjiro. One has I'll tell you the name of it in the next episode, but it's like a ball and just bouncing it up and down. And the other has arrow eyes, and they're closing in on the area that Tamayo, Tanjiro, Nezuko, and Yushiro are. Now, Tamayo says she doesn't know how to turn a demon back into a human yet, but they are dedicated towards that goal. So she asks him if she can study Nezuko's blood, and she wants more samples from demons as closely related to Kibutsuji as possible. And she thinks that Nezuko's body changed during the 2 years that she was asleep. And Tanjiro ends up agreeing to those two requests. Number one, studying Nezuko's blood, and number two, getting more samples from demons closely related to Kibutsuji as possible. Then, while that's all honky-dory and they're agreeing to all the great stuff, the ball from the girl demon comes flying through the wall, and they are under attack. And the boy demon says, "Did you decide how we'll kill them?" And the girl demon says, "Ruthlessly." And that's how the episode ends. So now we got a whole other problem on our hands right here in episode 8. Episode 8, dude, had a lot going on to it. So give me your takeaways about it, brother.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. I mean, you got to see a lot, really. I mean, you have, you got to see one of my favorites very briefly for a moment there. And then now we're getting into this whole thing with the Temari. We don't want to give anything away, but we'll get into that next week with these two brand new demons. One has that big ball and then the arrow eyes. You have Tamayo, that's this, you know, with the flower special demon ability, and we're going to get more into her. It was a very big building episode, but it played very significant detailed roles. And it was great the way they introduced these new characters. And I always say it here, you know, it's so unique, like all the different characters and that they're introducing. It's not like they're just introducing like another regular demon, and we're not just introducing like another regular corpse member. Like, they're all playing very significant roles, which adds up to one big plot point. So I thought it was great. What about you?
Yeah, I think that there are so many important key aspects in just this one episode. If we really sit down and break it down and think about this, let's talk about the big key things that we were introduced to in this episode. We saw that flashback of another demon slayer with Hanafuda earrings standing over moves on in what looks like a position where he could have been killed, right? We get that flashback. That's important. We meet Tamiyo, who her whole life's mission has been to lift Kibutsuchi's curse off others. And now she agrees to try and help Tanjiro turn Nezuko back from a demon to a human, and gives him instructions of, I'm going to study Nezuko's blood, and I need you to get blood samples from demons as closely related to Kibutsuji as possible. So all these three things that we just mentioned right there, without even the remainder of the episode, those are three crucial pieces of information that we need for the series altogether. So this episode was a low-key, absolute necessity, and we learned a lot in a very small amount of time. Not to even mention the cool parts of it, of, you know, Muzan mowing through some idiots in the drunk alleyway, talking about how he's close to perfection. Remind me of fucking Cell back in Dragon Ball Z, right? You know, talking about how he's close to his perfect version of himself, and then sends two demons out like hitmen to try to take out Tanjiro. He wants that guy gone now. But then he made it specific words to tell them, you need to take out the Demon Slayer with Hanafuda earrings. That's the only thing he really noticed about Tanjiro, was the Hanafuda earrings. Not anything else, not his hair color, not the scar on his head, not what he was wearing. He made a specific mention of the Hanafuda earrings, and that's going to play an important role later on too. So there's just so many key pieces of information thrown right at you, and then obviously the episode ends on a bang. Literally, when they bang through the fucking wall with the ball here that we're about to learn what's about in this final episode that I'll cover here today, which will be episode 9. But realistically, this is one of the more key early episodes that you're going to find in season 1. So with that being said, I'll go ahead and transition into the final episode of the day, which is going to be episode 9. So episode 9 picks right up where episode 8 left off again, with the demons attacking Tamiyo's house. We learn that the guy demon's name is Yahaba, and the girl demon's name is Susumaru. And we learn that Tamiyo uses a blood demon art to the objects. In this instance, it's her house. Actually, it's Yushiro that he uses it to hide objects in plain sight. In any event, Yahaba is confused as to why a demon slayer is hanging around with demons, because their whole goal as a crew and a unit is to kill demons, and yet Tanjiro's in there with Tamiyo, who's a demon, Yushiro, who's a demon, Nezuko, who's a human. He's not attempting to harm any of those three demons. So he's a little bit confused. And so from there, Susumaru brags that her Tamari uncovered their hiding place, and now we know that those balls are called Tamari. And Yushiro questions if Kibutsuji sent them. And at that point, one of the Tamari, the big balls we were just talking about, heads straight for Tamiyo, and Yushiro runs to protect her, but the Tamari switches courses mid-momentum and without hitting anything, and just swings right back into Yushiro, taking his head clean off. It was almost exactly back in episode 2 when Nezuko kicked that demon's head clean off before we met Urokodaki. Chase, what did you think about the spot here where this ball just went and it had full momentum going the other way and immediately switched midair and went right back into Yushiro taking his head clean off? What did you think about that?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I didn't think it was going to. And at first, when I first saw this, I was really freaked out. I was like, well, that's the end of him. I didn't see that coming, but I forget, you know, he is a demon. So these demons are so unique too. Like, I love all the special powers that they have. Like, every special power of every demon has a unique style and almost like a power and art to them. And it was really cool, man.
Agreed. Now, the next part here, Tanjiro and Tamiyo have Nezuko take the sleeping lady, the wife of the demon that was just created by Kibutsuji last episode. They took that wife there and she was sleeping to recover. They have Nezuko take that lady into the basement while they're under attack. And Tanjiro notices that Susumaru's scent is different than any other demon he's met to this point. He says that it's stronger and thicker. and Tanjiro realizes that they are targeting him specifically. And Susumaru launches the Temari at him, and Tanjiro uses total concentration water breathing, seventh form drop ripple thrust curve. And with that, he's able to stab the Temari with his sword, but all it does is stop it momentarily before the Temari pulls itself off of the sword. And again, the Temari are the ball things that she's throwing, almost look like dodgeballs with are more decorated, but obviously do a hell of a lot more damage. And from here, Yushiro is able to finally regenerate his head, and he's upset that they decide to bring Tanjiro and Nezuko to their place, because he says that the more of them that they are in one spot, the greater the odds that Kibutsuji will be able to find them. And Yushiro, he's a little bit weird about Tamiyo, and he screams out at these demons. He's so mad at them, he says that he hates anyone that gets in the way of the time he spends alone with Tamiyo. And Susumaru replies, "Well, you're about to be killed by one of the 12 Kizuki. Doesn't that make you feel special?" I want to stop here, because this is the first mention of the 12 Kizuki. And these are we're going to learn a little bit about what they are, but also we're going to learn, are these demons really some of the 12 Kizuki, you know? So, yeah, this is just a really interesting spot to stop here to discuss about her claiming that they're part of the 12 Kizuki and us finally hearing about them, because if I'm not mistaken, Tamiyo was just speaking about how she would like Tanjiro to give her blood samples from the demons closest to Muzan.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, I mean, we definitely find out a little bit more later on about the 12 Kizuki. But yeah, I think, which we'll reveal later, like what they are, but I think, you know, all I'll say is a lot later on, you're going to see a major difference with what you'll see. And I think a lot of them really want to be part of the 12 Kizuki. It's almost like an honor in a way. Think about this too. We're talking about all these forms Tanjiro is going through, and you know, Tamayo and her helper is having to help. He just got his head kicked off or head blown off by the bouncy ball by the Temari, right? And you have Nezuko out there trying to help out with everything. You have all of them giving their full strength on these guys, and it just shows what a long way they have to go, is what I'll say with that.
Yeah, and to add to that, when you say that there's a difference between those who claim to be the 12 Kizuki and those that are, it's just very interesting, the progression as it goes along. But from here, we learn a little bit about the 12 Kizuki. We learn that they're directly under Kibutsuji. That's pretty much all we hear about there, is that they're directly under him. But the Temari, they keep changing directions without having anything come into contact with them. Obviously, if you throw something at a wall and it connects to the wall, it's going to bounce in different directions. These things will stop in midair without anything hitting it and swing into a total completely different direction. So Yushiro tells Tanjiro that the arrows will tell him which direction the Temari are going and to dodge those arrows. But the plot twist here is Tanjiro can't see any arrows. So what ends up happening is Yushiro lends Tanjiro his sense of sight. And what he does is he ends up throwing a piece of paper with a symbol on it. And Tanjiro attaches it to his forehead. And with that symbol, he's able now to see what he wasn't able to see before, and does, when these Temari are in motion, see these red arrows that are guiding it. And Tanjiro tells Nezuko to take care of the demon in the tree while he takes on the Temari demon himself. So Nezuko is able to get to the arrow demon attacking him, which causes the arrows around the Temari to fall away. And at this point, Tanjiro uses water-breathing third form, flowing dance. And he's able to cut the Temari demon's arms off. And Tanjiro tells Tamiyo that she can use the blood samples. And Yushiro tells Tanjiro that if they are of the 12 Kizuki, they'll be stronger than any demon he's ever faced. And before any sort of blood samples able to be drawn, Susumaru regenerates her arms, and Yahaba finally joins the fray instead of sitting up there in the tree getting attacked by Nezuko. So Yushiro tells Tanjiro that Tanjiro should be the one to fight Yahaba first, and that the rest of them will take care of Susumaru in the meantime. So what ends up happening is Tanjiro jumps to attack Yahaba, and he sees the opening thread. And Chase had talked about the opening thread last week a bit. It's that little string that shows you where the killing blow would land if you swing properly and at the right time. But this opening thread, it appears, and almost as quickly as it appears, it is cut, snaps, and disappears. And he's never seen this before. You know, it throws him off a bit. So from here, Yahaba launches a directional arrow that attacks Tanjiro, throwing him in all different directions. So it's like this arrow is wrapped up in and has Tanjiro in its, I don't want to say grasp, but it's falling all over the place, smashing him into trees, into walls, into the ground. And Tanjiro ends up taking a second to think about what he can do given the situation. And what he decides to do is to use 8th form waterfall basin. And before we see what that really does, the scene moves to Nezuko and Yushiro fighting Susumaru. And Yushiro makes a mistake and names and actually calls out Tamio's name. And this is a mistake because Yaba recognizes that they now have two people on Kibutsuchi's wanted list right there within their grasp. So then Nezuko tries to kick the Temari. And when she tries to kick the Temari takes her leg off. And then Susumaru kicks Nezuko through the hole in the house. And Susumaru asks Yahaba if they can take 4 heads with them. But Yahaba says that 4 is too many, and that just the one of the Demon Slayer and the Fugitive will suffice, and that they have got no use for the others. Which honestly is a bit of a mistake, because they don't know Nezuko is really like that how valuable she really is. So they, you can definitely tell that they're not really in on these plans or know anything about what's going on. So in any event, Tamio gives Nezuko medicine to recover faster. And it goes back to Tanjiro, and these arrows are still coming at him. And his sword, they cannot cut the arrows. They go into the arrow, and it's almost like a ribbon, and they flex in, and so he's not able to cut the arrows. And he ends up needing to change the direction without touching them. So he uses 6th form to envelop the arrow, uses the footwork of the 3rd form, and eventually uses twisting whirlpool flowing water, and then hits Yahaba with the 2nd form improved with the lateral water wheel, and ends up taking Yahaba's head off. And that is where episode 9 ends. Bro, talk to me about that episode, my man.
It was badass, man. It was awesome. It was really cool. I call them like the Temari demons just because of the ball. But Susumaru, and Yahaba, it was cool. They were some of the most unique demons I've seen. And the way they threw those balls, they were almost like bombs in a way. Like they threw them through the house, but they worked with each other. Like they were a true team. And especially with Yahaba, like his power almost reminds me of another demon someone we'll see later on. But that's one thing I would always like to ask. I would love to know, if anyone knows, let us know, like about the demonic, I say demonic, like the demon magic system and like all the different special abilities. But it was awesome. And you had Tamio that you find out now that, you know, you realize how she's really rebelled against almost Muzan Kibutsuji, and she's a fugitive and trying to find herself like a cure. You know, it was just everything was great about it. It was one of those action-packed episodes. So, yeah, man, what are your takeaways?
I agree with you. So when I say there's a little bit of something in this episode that you can take away multiple, you know, you can pull multiple things away from this one, is we hear about the name, the 12 Kizuki, you know, but that's just the first time we hear about it. And that's going to play a role going forward. Like you just mentioned, Tamio, we learned that she's a fugitive and she's on Kibutsuji's wanted list. You know, not that he really has a list, but so to speak, in any event. And we talk about blood samples. We talk about studying Nezuko's blood, to why she was able to sleep for 2 years and not have to feed, and when she sleeps, what kind of recovery that is. So there's just a lot of nuances in this episode while the entirety of the episode they are under attack. So you're hearing all these little Easter eggs of things are going to come into play later on throughout the series while they're being attacked by stronger demons than they've faced at all to this point. They have they have big issues. I mean, think about it. It starts off with Yushiro losing his head, and that's—I mean that literally. Like the Temari hit his head and took it off. So, yeah, it starts with him losing his head. Nezuko gets her leg blown off by one of the Temari too, trying to kick it. So, you know, Tanjiro's getting thrown all around by these directional arrows. So you're just in a world of shit. And you know, obviously they're able to overcome to the point where Tanjiro uses one of the water breathing forms and is able to hit that lateral water wheel and remove Yahaba's head, so we got at least one down. But all the stuff that we heard about, like the almost the chess back and forth of shit, they gave us a little more information. Oh, but now we've got these abilities. Now I'm going to lend you my sight versus, you know, the fact that your main ability is smell. So you just got all these little intricacies and nuances working in the background of a massive fight with two strong demons early on in the series. I just found that really impressive. So those are just some of my takeaways. I thought it was another step up. This one took us to another, you know, the next, what you would say. And obviously this will tie into what Chase will go into next week with episodes 10, 11, 12. But like, because obviously it's not done here. We still got the Temari demon, even though the arrow demon's head's gone. We still gotta finish that up. But you know, this is all happening while we're under attack and having the worst. We're faring the worst that we fared in any battle to this point so far, right here, right now, while still learning about key components that will play a factor later on in the series. So I found it really, like, it was an impressive episode. But to kind of get into our debates for the day, man, how about you kick us off with what you got on your end?
Yeah, so speaking of the 12 Kizuki, my debate for the day is, with these demons, as we don't want to get too far into the future, but, you know, some are defined as 12 Kizuki, some aren't. Why do you think they want to be a part so much of the 12 Kizuki to the point that they can believe they are part of the 12 Kizuki? Like, why is that a desire so much to get that close to Muzan? Just because he's kind of like the big bad, almost like the king of demons overall? Or why do you think they see it as a desire? Do you think it's blood? Do you think it's like ability for what they feel like they'll achieve? Do you think they feel like being that close and how, let's say, you know, how many battles and how many people they've ate and how much stronger they've got, they just feel like they're there when they might not be? What do you think that thought is in their brain, why they might consider themselves part of the 12 Kizuki, where Muzan Kibutsuji, unless he's personally come up to you, you know exactly if you're in there or not? Which you wouldn't have to guess too much if I think you are.
Look in the mirror.
Exactly. Like, why would they think that?
I think it really ties into, and we make comparisons to other works here quite often, but it's no different than the Death Eaters with Lord Voldemort. You know, he's this all-powerful entity, this being. They see him as more than just a person, or more than just a demon, more than just a supervillain. They see him as access to power themselves, and they've got no problem, and it's almost like an honor to come close to him, because whatever, you know, even though they realize they'll never be able to match him, if they get close enough, they could be one of the most powerful beings in the universe. Even though Kibutsuji will always be over them power wise, it's still, you know, there's nothing wrong with being number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in the world. You know what I mean? So That being said, it's the power that comes with following someone of that magnitude. And on top of it, it's like, it's one of those things where it's a benefit. There's no downside that no one's been able to stop this guy so far. You've said it yourself. He's been around. I don't know if it's been thousands or hundreds of years. I haven't read the manga, but it hasn't been discussed up until this point here at episode 9. But regardless, if Muzan's been around for that many years, no one's been able to stop him. So he's doing something right. So just like almost the safety, you feel the semblance of safety being part of his inner crew. And the best way I said I can compare it is the way the Death Eaters feel about Lord Voldemort, the Dark Lord. They bow down to him. They want to be a Bellatrix Lestrange. Like, oh, I'm your closest follower. You know, I'm the one that I am your most devoted, loyal servant. It's almost an honor to serve someone so powerful and so extraordinary. Is what I would say in response to your question there and the debate that we're going to go into about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. As far as intellectually thinking, though, what's wild, I would think it's so surprising, right? I think they become also so used to getting what they want, doing what they want, because most of them, you know, they're fighting just regular people, or most, you know, a lot of the normal level people in the Demon Slayer Corps that we saw out of Final Selection that even make it through that, like the very few, right? A big portion of them are not even as good as Tanjiro. But then we'll go in, you have, for instance, I'll give you an example, when we have seen Giyu Tomioka, this wouldn't even be a contest if he was there. Like, he would probably sit there and laugh, which much later on, there is one that actually does. it's like, there's two different levels here, and I think also they haven't come to the point they've come in contact with someone like that before, because there's so few of those. There's only so far they can go. And it's kind of like how Tony Stark said to Peter Parker one time, you know, this isn't exactly in their pay grade. Like, they're not going to, like, you know, this isn't worth their time. Like, they're on to bigger fish here. So maybe in their mind, they can kind of get like, maybe I become that strong so much. But I do agree with you. It'd be almost like an honor. And just even going back to the episode before you talked about, like, even like what he did with the woman in his blood, like, he was like, part of the monologue, I think he said, he's like, even an extra ounce of my blood would make your head explode. Like, just stuff like that. Like, it's like an honor even to be like so close to him. But I think also, like, their ego gets so big because, like, right now, for instance, like, Tanjiro is like one of the most powerful we've seen in this little group besides Big Daddy Giyu right now. And you know, he's having to pull out every aspect of the game trying to beat these guys, but they really haven't actually fought anyone that's true, like for example, like Uradaki. Like, I feel like Uradaki wouldn't even be struggling right now, so maybe that's why they think that. But what are your debates for the day, Jay Nelly?
Yeah, no, or yeah, Urokodaki probably wouldn't have much of a issue with some of the, because even though he's old, you know, he's got that knowledge, that wisdom. You think about, you know, sports, and one of the things that separates and how their athletes that can play later on is because it's not all about athleticism anymore. They use their minds because they've seen it all. They've been in those positions. And so, for example, Tom Brady's a really good person to point at, of being able to play at such a high level for such a long time, because what are you going to do that he hasn't seen? My guy's been in the league for 20-something years. Obviously, he's been retired for, the past two or three at this point. But point being is, you know, Urokodaki has still got a lot left in the tank, and I don't think these imbeciles would give him any sort of a hard time. But anyways, my debate and what I wanted to go into today, and I don't really think that we can answer it, because I just don't think that it hits the part of the series, or maybe it doesn't get mentioned at all and it's something worth bringing up regardless. It's something I really do want to talk about. What the hell is up with this sharing of abilities? like where fucking Yushiro lends Tanjiro his ability to see, and he like has this symbol on a piece of paper, and he tosses it to him, and he puts it on his head, and because he put the paper on his head, he's able to not only utilize his own extraordinary ability to smell and sense and things of that nature, but now he's got that additional sight that Yushiro, that is his ability. So what's up with this like ability sharing, and is this something that happens often, or is this like frowned upon? What is going on with this ability sharing?
Yeah, I don't honestly know. I think that's more of a question. I mean, we'll probably find out more later on, but I think that's more of a demon thing. Because as you notice, like, you know, Demon Slayer members can't really share anything. They can throw each other swords and stuff, and maybe they have like a different special feature with like what weapon they share and what different tricks to the trade they can teach each other. But almost I think it's like a demon thing where they can maybe share magic abilities. But that's a good question, because that's a really cool one to know about, like the eyesight that he shared. I would really love to know more about Tamayo and what's his name?
Yushiro.
Yushiro. Yushiro is a dick, first of all. Like, I never really liked him, but and he called Nezuko ugly at one point too. But it's interesting. That's something I really wish I could answer. I just truly don't know. I wonder if that it's almost like a cool version, if the Marvels had a cool version where they were sharing all their powers, but that's a shitty way to do it, where this is a badass way to do it. So I don't know. I have no idea. I wish Yushiro grabbed one of those balls and was able to throw it back at him. That'd be pretty sick.
Yeah, so at that point, if you think it's more of a demon-specific ability, that's interesting, because then, you know, what's to stop demons from teaming up and utilizing their special powers with each other to take out Demon Slayer members and things of that nature? So it is interesting, and it is something that is I would thought worth bringing up. And that's another part, too, the aspect that you mentioned. It's a demon sharing an ability with a demon slayer. So that already shouldn't really coincide so well, you know? That a demon is what a demon slayer's job to do is hunt and kill those things. So a demon sharing its special ability with a demon slayer, it already is. It doesn't make a whole lot of logical sense. So I'm wondering if that's something that they threw in there and didn't think about too much, or if it is something that will come up into play, and maybe, like I mentioned, demons will start, when they start realizing they're outclassed by maybe the top tier of the Demon Slayer Corps, maybe they end up combining and sharing their own powers to take out some of the good guys. Who knows? I don't know. But all I know is what we saw on screen is we had a demon share an ability with a demon slayer and give him the ability to see stuff that he wasn't able to see prior. And I just don't know where that came from or where that ties into the storyline and if that's something that's going to come up and, you know, play a factor later on.
There is one instance I'm thinking of that we will get into in a few weeks where technically there is a demon that uses abilities to help. But it'll come up in a few weeks, but it's still not to that extent. So maybe that kind of will help the situation, but I still think it's more of a demon thing. Like, it's not like a human can be like, here's some magical powers. So, but I don't know, man. But yeah, you want to close this out for the day?
Sounds like a plan. So folks, if this is the first time that you've tuned into us, we really hope you enjoyed what you heard today. If you've been with us since the very beginning, thank you for continuously being the shields that guard the realms of fantasy. If you're looking to where you can find us online, we're on all the social sites. So we're on Instagram at Official Ridiculous Patronus. We're on TikTok at Ridiculous Patronus. We've got a backup Instagram at @fact_or_fantasy. Backup TikTok at @fact_or_fantasy. We're on Facebook at Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy. We also have Twitter, RP Factor Fantasy, Snapchat, RP Factor Fantasy, and also our own website as well, which is ridiculouspatronus.blogspot.com. So please click like, subscribe, follow along, leave comments, leave written reviews, leave star ratings, like engage with us as much as you want and can, because we really do appreciate that, and it does help us tremendously here on the show. And speaking about the show, if you're looking to where you can find us in the podcast and where we are, if you are an Apple user, we are on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, we're on Google Play. We're also on Spotify. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Amazon Music. We're on Audible. We're on Stitcher. We're on Acast, our own host site, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy are there. But we are out for the day because this has been another ridiculous production.
Chase and Josh
Factor Fantasy
signing off.